sure that we had enough money in reserves that we wouldn't default on any bonds. So that way, because the county backed the bonds, that way the county didn't want to make sure they weren't all of a sudden slapped with $1 million in bond payments or something like that. That was unexpected. So anyway, the reserves are roughly $2 million we have in reserves, which is about where we should be. The agency's budget is $14 million, so that's, 14%, something like that. And the state controller's office wants us to be somewhere between 10 and 20%. We're right about the middle of that, which is a good place to be. So because our budget's based 100% on the economy and economic conditions, whereas municipalities only need to take that 6 to 8%, you've probably heard that, because your revenue stream is pretty steady with property taxes. Ours is 100% based on the economy. As the economy tanks, the waste tanks and all the recycling markets tank. So because of that, the state controller's office wants us to have a much higher reserve percentage than they even told me. 10 to 20% is where you should be. And like I said, we're about 14 right now. So it's going good. The budget's good. I mentioned last time the only really rate increases we had were the pool charge went up for the towns, and that was directly related to the four towns not signing on. And all the towns were aware of that a year and a half ago. They knew that. We went through all the negotiations. They knew that it was going to go up. We promised them we'd keep them stagnant for 2016. We would take the loss. But in 2017, they would go up. So they were well met. And the other one was the single stream we're going to start charging for, which I think has been discussed for at least a year and a half now.
Is Marlboro signing back on? Did you say that last month? Sorority. So did one of them write a letter asking to be able to come back?
No.
I thought you said that last month.
No. The four that dropped out were Kingston, Ulster, Saugerties, and Marlboro.
And so none of them have reached out?
No.
I don't know how I had that in my head then.
They're doing their own thing. So and these contracts are good. This is the first year of a five-year contract, so they're good to the end of 20. So things are going good. Like I said, the reserves, we got to keep an eye on the reserves, not only for the comptroller's office, but, and I should, when I say comptroller's office, I want you to know that this is a verbal conversation I had with the comptroller's office when we were audited when I first took over. I asked for something in writing, and they wouldn't give it to me because they don't have anything in writing. It's essentially, the way he put it, he said, if we come in and audit you and you have less than 10%, we're going to criticize you because you're not managing the foundation as well. If you have over 20%, we're going to criticize you because you got too much money in reserves and your tipping fees are too high. And you should be between that 10 and 20. Although I don't have anything, I think that's a good number. Looking at how the economy could drop in 1 year, if you stay in that 10 to 20, you'd be pretty safe.
I'm pretty familiar with that routine with them.
Are you? Yeah.
Although you're in a unique situation because if you couldn't pay your bills, you wouldn't have to raise the rates in the middle of the year. The county's backed all your bills, so they would just have to pay them.
Yeah, you guys are our backers, at least for another 8 years. Then after that, when the contract runs out, we're on our own.
If a town did that, they'd have to raise taxes or fees or do something crazy, or borrow money, the county's responsible.
And, we've been keeping the tipping fee the same. The big number is the MSWC and me. That's the largest number that we deal with. And that tipping fee has stayed the same now for 4 years, for 85% of the users and 100% for 3 years. So we haven't had to move that. And I don't want to move it going forward because one thing we have to look at long-term planning. And one thing we do have to look at is when this contract ends with final disposal in the end of 19. So 3 years from now, I'll be going out to bid. I don't know what those rates are going to do. And we have one one hauling company that's gobbling up all the small ones. And so my fear is at that time when it comes around, we're one of the only players in town that they may really socket to us, and even way out to bid. So I don't know what the disposal is going to be like either, with Seneca Meadows or anybody else. So because of all that, I want to make sure we have enough money in reserves that instead of 103, if it goes to 113, I don't want to hit the use of the system with that jump in 1 year. I want to be able to absorb that for a couple of bucks a year and work off reserves and draw those. So we've got a plan for that.
We're already high, right? One of the highest in the state in terms of tipping rates?
No, actually, if you look at Royal across the river, they're less. more or less in Columbia County, Greene County. Sullivan's a little less than us.
Then why doesn't Red Hook and those places bring their garbage anymore to us? I thought because the rates across the river, they bring it in.
We get Rhinebeck, we get Red Hook.
Oh, I thought those. I thought Dutchess County.
No, they're cheaper for them than run down to Poughkeepsie.
Oh, good. All right.
Poughkeepsie's about 82 a ton. We're at 103. But they get like a $4 million subsidy from the county. If I had a $2 million subsidy, I'd be down to 2 at 82.
Right. So, well, we did. You did for 100 years.
Yeah.
And that's why our rates were low.
Yeah.
You know, it's all
103 across the board.
Taxpayers are paying it one way or the other, either through the subsidy or higher tipping fees.
And 20% of that is debt service. That's something people really got to keep in mind. It's huge.
Right.
If I didn't have that debt service, I think I mentioned it last time, we'd be down at 82 a ton. You know, it's pretty good. And that way, I would beat everybody. Private sector, waste management, the road charge is 88. So I could beat the private sector and the public sector in the region.
Legislator Green?
So any questions?
Just a quick question. Is there anything being done to address the single stream, like right now the city of Kingston and the towns that are participating, the towns are bringing in or you're collecting from the towns separated materials that can be processed at the MRF, and the city and the haulers, as I understand it, is there anything in this budget to address that? They sort of pay their own way.
Well, everybody does.
Pardon? They're going to start charging for single stream.
We're going to charge everybody for single stream $20
a ton. Then I missed that.
I was just, we're charging $20 a ton across the board. We don't distinguish between municipalities and private sector.
Yeah.
We're an authority, so we should be treating everybody the same, whether a three-way authority or a water authority. But just so you know, I went to a conference last week up in Lake Placid, and even at $20 a ton, that's a pretty good rate. I'm finding when I was up there, I was told that the statewide average, most people are around 30, 35 a ton. I did get scared a couple of weeks ago because one of our haulers bought, one of the smaller haulers actually, bought another hauler out that's closer to Albany, and he started taking his single stream directly to Waste Connections in the Port of Albany, which is one of our brokers, and he says they're charging him 35 a ton to dump. Mm-hmm. 35 a ton, which made me nervous because that's who takes so far. You know, so at one point it went down to negative 10. They were charging us $10 a ton, then it went back up to zero. To show you the difference, if you look at it as an aggregate across the board, the difference between dual stream and single stream, over the course of the past year, dual stream we generate revenue. This is not including the electrical costs, employee costs, or any of that. Dual stream we'll get about $103 a ton. It's just by coincidence, it seems it's the same number as the MSW tipping fee. Purely by coincidence. It's about $103 a ton. Where over the past year, single stream has been $3 a ton. So you're talking 103 to 3. And that's the difference. It's a huge, huge difference. And we add an employee cost, we're losing a lot of money on single stream. Even at 20, I've got my fingers crossed.
At that conference, did you take that conversation further? I mean, are there discussions about stopping single stream and moving back to dual stream among your peers in the state?
I didn't hear that. I do know in certain parts of the nation they have gone back. A lot of communities have. I don't know about anybody local. I do know that when Westchester...
At some point it just makes financial sense. I mean, at some point...
Yeah. And Waste Management closed down 4 major plants in the U.S. in the past year and a half maybe. The single stream markets are shot, and China's not growing at 20%, they're growing at what, about 6%, so they're being much more selective of what they take. I didn't hear anybody locally, but I do know nationally there are a lot of communities that are going back to dual stream. Well, Westchester, they revamped their MRF over the past probably 2 years ago. And they looked at going single stream, and at that time, when they went through the reconstruction, they decided to stay dual. They saw that I think they were looking down the road, and they made a decision. This is probably a better way to go. So
certainly less volatility, given that. I mean, even choosing a price at $20 contractually, you know, you run the risk of it, like you say, mid contract starting to cost money. for the agency
to take it.
So,
and, you know, we can adjust our rates at any time. You know, we meet monthly. Mm-hmm. And that's something we did discuss last year. The board wanted to start charging. And, okay, do we adjust them quarterly? Do we want to adjust them monthly? Just so you know, the single stream itself, we get a monthly rate. So what happens when we call the brokers, we say for the month of October, this is what it's going to be. And they give us that for the month. Some commodities, when we sell them, they give you 24 hours. That's it. That's the price you get for 24 hours or 24 hours, or 48 hours. The single stream, they've been doing it monthly. So at least I know that month, for the month of October, it's going to be zero. Or for the month of October, it's you got to pay us $5 a ton, whatever it is. And we call the brokers and get the prices. Paper is that way too. But the other things, like the ones that are more volatile, are like some of the plastics. You know, they only give you a price when we got a load ready to go. They said, okay, this price is going to be up to 24 hours. We got to get a whole bunch of brokers to get the best price so I can report that to the board and do it the way that we have to do with the comptroller's office. So I got off a little bit on a tangent there. But as
you
far
can
as,
change the prices monthly.
Yeah, so the single stream is a monthly rate. I know what we're going to be charged that month. Sometimes, and we have to document this, and I don't know how much detail you want, but sometimes I might get a price from one of the brokers. There's really only two brokers in the area. I had one in New Jersey that wanted to test a couple of test loads. They call them test loads. They'll let load, send it up, and they'll send them back the product. They'll pay us for it. And they'll determine at that point if it's something they really want. I don't know if they're going to come back again or not. But the two brokers are in Beacon and Albany. And usually when one broker gives you a price, the other one's pretty close. They all know what each other's charging in the area, so they know what the going rates are. But, you know, we did discuss, and the reason we didn't go down the path of adjusting it monthly or even quarterly last year is because specifically for the municipalities, because the municipalities, they do their budgeting in the fall, and then they're planning on these prices throughout the year. And I'd hate to have them, because they go every month, they're going like this. You know, one month we're charging them, the next month we're not charging them, the next month we are charging them, and it can kind of wreak havoc on the municipality's budget. So we stayed at zero this year, and we took the loss. Next year we'll go with $20, and I think that's about higher than that. You know, I think the agency's just going to have to absorb it, unless the board overrules me, and they want to start charging more. But I try not to mess with the budgets of the municipalities too much. They have the plan, you know, and they got the tax cap, and a lot of other things to worry about.
Tim, one other thing. Later on, we've been discussing the plastic bag legislation with, the supermarkets, grocery stores, retail stores. And we think hopefully when we come to an agreement or we can find something, maybe we'll come and sit down and see if you would partner with us to have the bags that, you know, the reusable bags.
Yeah.
Maybe, if you guys would, out of our budget, maybe a little out of yours, and just buy 20,000 or 50,000 of them.
Okay.
And, we want to try to...
I think that's a good thing. You know who we partnered with one year when we did the... we do the household hazardous waste three times a year. In fact, we just did it last weekend. Adams gave us cases and cases of their reusable bags because we started doing a food drive.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know how we made the connection. I think it was back when Michelle was there. She reached out to them or something. But we had... And then we got to the point where we were giving them away to people.
Something.
Dale said Adams.
You know, if we're going to do something with that, maybe just
there's
to encourage people.
There's no Adams in Ulster County, I don't think.
Sure there is.
Where?
Just about.
Oh, Kingston, right.
Yeah.
So either way, we're still a couple months away from that probably.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I'll talk to the board about it.
Yeah, I mean, that would... The plastic, we wouldn't have to deal with as much plastic.
Yeah, can we do the reusable bags with the county seal?
Or the RRA. That's something we could all work on down the road. But we're thinking of doing a contest in schools, maybe have kids draw some up and pictures of, and then hand them.
Michelle did that 1 year, right, with the kids' contest that became the billboards?
Yeah, and we had billboards throughout the county for the winners.
But we'll talk, we'll definitely talk to you about that.
I think that's a great idea.
Good.
Bring it up to the board. So, and so it looks like, in October every year we finalize the budget. So 2 weeks from today, the board meeting will officially finalize the budget. It'll be over. Because like I said, we haven't got any comments. So it's not going to change as far as I know.
Good.
All right.
Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You.
Yeah. Thanks for coming.
Sure. Have a good night.
You
Thanks,
too.
Thanks, Tim. You too.
Good to see you.
All right. We're going to skip to resolution 447, which is establishing a policy to require annual public reporting of building energy consumption and benchmark information for 20-owned buildings.
I guess I'll start and I'll let them jump in.
We just need to move it and second it.
I'll move it.
Sorry.
Sorry about that.
That's right.
You know, the county redenying the new NYSERDA Clean Energy Communities Program, which has, you know, some major awards to, you know, forward-thinking municipalities with regard to clean energy projects. And, we looked at the categories, looked at what we've accomplished over the last couple of years, and this resolution actually codifies by legislative policy. We do as a routine now. We track our usage pretty. Actually, it's one of Manda's major job responsibilities. But this would basically take that action we've been taking on the operations side and codify it, make it a public document that we would post on the website annually. Mm-hmm. You know, something we've been talking about, Legislator Dawn and I had talked about it, and they'd I'd love to maybe sponsor that, and Kevin overheard it as well, too. So, but again, this is a really positive thing. I'd love to have the whole committee jump on as sponsors if you'd be willing to. But Amanda, you want to talk some more about it?
Sure. In the past, we've presented data to this committee and to maybe Public Works, you know, looking at the energy use of, you know, each separate building and kind of across our building portfolio. And as Ken said, all this does is provide that these different metrics have to be reported publicly, you know, within a certain time frame. And really, this kind of sets us up to be able to be eligible for the grant funding from NYSERDA through this program, which for Ulster County is pretty significant. If we're one of the first two municipalities within this region to become deemed eligible and deemed a clean energy community, we'll be eligible for a $250,000 grant with no match required.
We believe this completes the package.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah. We don't think anyone else in the region is near this. So.
You know, can I ask you a quick question? We discussed this last month. You know, purchasing the credits and the renewable energy is obviously we all support it. But we'd like to maybe, what we were talking, and it'd be nice to be able to purchase it from within the county. Because we're going, you know, we may be purchasing it from Albany, we may be purchasing it from Syracuse, but it'd be nice for us to show commitment as a county, say, hey, we're going to buy our renewable energy from Ulster County. We're going to, you know, put our money where our mouth is and say, let's get projects, you know, wind farm up on Bel Air Mountain, solar panels. You know, we're just thinking out loud here, but it'd be nice to buy it from here.
Of course, it would be. One of our obstacles is we have to follow municipal procurement and take the lowest bid. And we were able to, you know, using some of our purchasing consortium, identify credit. Were very inexpensive, you know, so really the extra cost of doing it really, the size of our operation didn't make a huge difference, but, you know, we're working really hard to, you know, promote alternate energy, you know, in the various municipalities. Oh, Amanda has some updates in some of the towns we're working with, you know. We're just about ready to go to construction with our project on the landfill in the town of Ulster. We've been working with the college. We've retooled that since Dr. Roberts has joined the college, and originally Dr. Cott wanted all roof mounts. We, you know, I've been hesitant with that because we knew that some of the roofs here needed replacement before we had an investment in. But Dr. Roberts, but I appreciated more the kind of the aesthetic.
Well, they own a ton of fields around here, too.
Yeah, and basically the new design that we've just sent to the college for their review and approval essentially puts the system along the back entrance below the leach field and around the circle here, around the garden. It's actually really nice because it's really front and center and really showcases.
And if you go down Lucas, they own fields further down Lucas Avenue, which are not even right on campus.
Yep, and I guess we had to make our recommendations based upon, you know, where the, you know, where you could hook up, where the meters were, and those were the sites that were deemed, you know, really give us the biggest bang for the buck.
And, well, the high visibility, I think, it has a value that can't be quantified.
Yeah, and as you review the capital projects as part of the budget process, you'll see that there's roof replacements for the college built into that, and the plan is once the roofs are replaced, then they're going to be able to get nicer to expand the footprint of the arrays. So,
yeah, especially with young people and students coming and seeing. Yeah, you know that the college is.
It's a massive system. I mean, the system on the landfill alone is, you know, 80 acres of solar panels. It's a massive system.
Yeah.
You know,
I'll keep my eyes peeled for sure. You know, you can buy RECs, you can buy SRECs, which are solar RECs. I've never heard of something getting so specific as to drill down to, like, within a county or a region.
What do you mean?
Because RECs are a credit. They're like a commodity.
I'm just saying, even if we're buying a certain percentage from out of the county, as long as we're generating the same amount within it,
So that's ultimately, we have a hierarchy that kind of guides what we do. And the first is use less, mm-hmm. you know, so you don't have to produce that or, you know, buy credits for that. Mm-hmm. Do so more efficiently. So that's where we're looking at lighting and swapping things out. And then the next thing is on-site renewables. So how do we, and we consider like the Ulster landfill project to be basically an on-site, even though it's physically off-site because it's within the community. So really, you know, that's the focus area right there, is to produce more and more, you know, if we have those larger scale PPA agreements, and then how do we, you know, incorporate these into rooftop, and you know, where do we go from there to build our capacity for on-site renewables? And then RECs are the last kind of the hierarchy.
Fills the bucket.
That kind of rounds it out while we focus on reducing our use, making it more efficient, on-site renewables. So we do always keep that mindset and focus, mm-hmm. that we're not just kind of buying RECs in our, job is done.
Like for example, the landfill will produce, our estimate's about 25% of the electricity we're using for the government.
So wow.
So that'll reduce by 25% the number of RECs.
So
it's huge. And that'll expand. And I know that Amanda had asked about this. We've been working in... you know, in the near future, we're going to be putting out a comprehensive RFP, looking at all of our rooftops looking at that. I mean, obviously, the law enforcement center is an obvious target.
Can you replace roofs easily once their solar panels are up?
You've got to take them off.
So you want to make sure the roofs still have another 25 years.
So we've got the
because you don't want to be putting them on there and then it's 7 years taking them off.
So the law enforcement center is a good target. The BRC, depending on what happens with the family court, I think that we're all committed to really incorporating some pretty impressive green elements into that, that if it comes together, and obviously...
Yeah, that's what we looked at 7 years
ago. What about if we get property at a tax sale, say, we're not going to sell this piece of property, we're going to put solar panels
always
on
looking at
always
it.
Always looking at it.
Because, you know, there's landlocked pieces,
that
aren't great, and...
Unfortunately, we always end up with swamp land,
or
something that's something so far away from the connector that wouldn't be financially feasible. Yeah,
but you never know.
Oh,
one may come.
Amanda picks through the list like crazy.
I just wanted to ask.
Yeah, Tracy.
Just since you brought up the law enforcement center, I know over the year we've seen different improvements come up. You know, or required improvements to HVAC system or the heating, mm-hmm. et cetera. When those things come up, do they go through your office? Are you consulted about whether or not there's a way, meaning Amanda, a way to make it more efficient, or because it's the law enforcement,
it's always Public Works and Buildings and Grounds.
Mm-hmm.
Even the building itself, those things have to go through Public Works. We've been in close communication about the large HVAC capital project.
Mm-hmm.
We've met with Central Hudson and their support contractors to build into that project more energy efficient measures from the get-go. And how do we maximize, whether it's Central Hudson or NYSERDA, the money on the table mm-hmm. for that? So we've been looking at that from the very first. They don't have the contract out yet for the engineer, I believe, mm-hmm. for that capital,
mm-hmm.
but that will be part of it, like right from the start.
Have the lights been addressed there? I know you've been going building by building in the county, but I remember that being a big issue
from
the inception.
Yeah, right now we've done outdoor lighting there. It's all mm-hmm. LED.
Yep.
We've done indoor tubes on the
Administrative side.
Mm-hmm. Not the correction side, the other side, the not locked side. And then we actually have right now ICF, an engineering firm that contracts to Central Hudson, reviewing the plans to look at sensors
mm-hmm.
and what's the next step? What can we do there?
Yeah.
And did you have those giant warehouse lights as well, too?
Oh, yeah, and we did the warehouse, which was like, those are like 300 watts of pop, those things.
Wow.
So taking them down to under 100. Oh. So it started with lighting. Yeah. The challenge there is that a lot of the mechanicals are still new. So when you just look, even with higher costs of energy than we currently have, at the cost benefit of replacing that equipment, it's challenging without having a lot of incentive money or reason from other places to do that.
Yeah.
Like the boilers are new. Like, you're not going to go in there and rip it out.
Right.
Put something different in there. But,
The sheriff has been very receptive, and they partnered with us, and they're always open to those kind of ideas.
Yep.
In fact, when you see when you look at the budget, we're purchasing a lot more EVs as part of the budget, and the sheriff's actually going to take a hybrid for
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a plug-in, because unfortunately with the light package, they can't support a plug-in. But there's 12, and one of them is a standard hybrid for the sheriff, which we're happy to
see. That's great.
Start.
I think it'll be the first sheriff's department in the state.
We talked about police vehicles.
The light packages are a real challenge for the batteries.
And then for the benchmarking resolution, should I pass this?
Yeah, we actually had some technical amendments to it. Ann had gotten some technical guidance from NYSERDA a few days ago. We had talked to the.
Oh, this is going to be the one we want us to vote on?
Please. You'll see, it's mostly.
I mean, we can't change it tonight because none of the sponsors are here, but we can make an amendment.
We talked to them. They're cool with it.
And you can amend it, and we just have to have them approved.
Yeah, they're fine with that. But it really addresses some.
I get a copy of
the.
You can have mine. I'll wait till you're done.
We've been on the. Amanda's been on top of this since the program was announced, and we're really positioned well to go for it. And the we were a week ahead. Our resolution drafting was a week ahead of the state guidance.
Yeah.
So this is to.
We circled back with some folks at NYSERDA, because we want to do this right, we don't want to have to come back with another resolution. They had a couple of suggestions. On the second page, it's really just the second resolve. So there's now three resolves in this version. The second is added. It just adds in some language about how long utility bills must be retained. And this is right out of the NYSERDA guidance, 3 years, but I think we retain them, like, forever.
Yeah, I was going to say, would we get rid of them?
When we do the initial posting, we may choose to put a history there to really show a lot of the improvements and how they've reduced the cost of electricity as part of that.
Can we say at least 3 years, then, in case there is the circumstance that we keep it for longer?
Yeah.
It's not something we would normally get rid of.
No.
Right, but that's what I mean, just to have it.
Through the tracking that Amanda does, it's all.
Yeah, it is all.
Electronic.
And then we're also using their guidance for reporting deadlines. So this is no later than September 1st of each year, and that's for the prior years.
Right.
But we do all this data crunching before we go to budget preparation, because it's really, you can't be working with a year and a half old data when DPW goes to budget preparation. So we want to make sure that we have that information for them. So I use this date, but I would be fairly confident saying that we would have it by the middle of the summer or before then. And also they suggested that we keep language in there or insert language that says that we'll produce this annual report and we'll also keep the prior year's report so you can compare them year to year. But again, that seemed like a no-brainer, that you'd just be adding to it. And a lot of the metrics that we're kind of talking about here in the third resolve are ones that are produced. We use a private software called Utility Track in order to do this. This also uses EPA, their benchmarking through Energy Star, through Portfolio Manager. And those two programs are completely, you can export from the one into the other. It's very easy. So the software that we have will convert directly to Portfolio Manager, and then these are the kind of metrics that are normal reporting metrics for either Portfolio Manager, which is the EPA's kind of platform, or what we use, which is Utility Track. So we think this is not going to be beyond like making a report to post on the internet. This is not anything that we don't do. But it will make us hopefully a clean energy community, maybe one of the first ones.
That's great. I also think codifying it is smart anyway, because you want to keep it for.
And it's such a good business practice we've done for a long time, since the department being in existence.
Cool. Let's agree.
Just a quick question on the wording, clean power community.
That was a typo. And
so it is clean energy, and it's fixed in the
on this one.
Great.
Okay. So I think I had clean power on the brain.
And then just on what you just summarized here is the same kind of information that Public Works has been asking and Climate Smart. And if there's any way that either Suzanne or you guys, somebody can come to the Climate Smart meeting because Suzanne was away. That's exactly the kind of thing that we're trying to understand is moving what's been done and moving forward, what is in the capital budget and I'd rather have us be talking about this before we have to vote on the budget rather than in the past, I've looked at it afterwards. I've gone back retrospectively.
Right.
So however that can work out. That
we try. There's a lot of meetings in a month. We try to do.
Well, Amanda's going to be presenting at this. So, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but this is a meeting ahead of time. This is on the same night that we usually have our Climate Smart Committee.
Oh, okay.
So it would be an earlier committee meeting that would focus on that one question relating to budget.
And certainly the way that the state does these programs now, they're all competitions. So certainly we're trying to advantage the county and put us on the forefront and position ourselves to get this money. We don't want to disadvantage ourselves by educating everyone and having them act quicker than we can act. So it's, unfortunately, it's always a competition, right? What they call the Hunger Games,
Do you send this to us digitally?
Yeah, I just asked.
And I'll send it to all the legislators. I wasn't sure how far Amanda was ready to go with it.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'll move the amendments.
Okay.
Well,
including the at least. You get that?
Yeah, I put the at least.
We have a motion for the amended.
I'll second it.
Okay, any other questions for Amanda or Ken?
That's good. Yeah, hopefully we'll win. It's a competition, and we're well-positioned, and then I'm sure we'll be having a long conversation on the best way to spend $250,000.
Wouldn't that be
fun?
That would be good.
Anyone interested in have a place for additional flyers you're interested?
Amanda? She's going to send it digitally. So we can send some.
You want to take some with you?
Yeah, I'll take a couple, too.
Thank you.
And then just one other thing.
Oh, sure.
Wait. Can we vote on it? We want you to vote on it.
Okay, all in favor?
On the amendment.
On the amendment?
Aye.
Okay.
And on the resolution?
On the resolution? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Cool.
Okay,
Can I add my name to this, too?
Yeah,
you want to put the whole committee on it?
Everybody?
Yeah.
It'll be a real positive one.
And you don't want to
see it. It's a different one.
Strung out now with a lot of committees.
Put
your name on it.
Oh, yes.
Just meaning as a sponsor.
Yes, absolutely.
We're not doing that to you.
We'll think of some creative way to really do the public information that really demonstrates the work that's been done over a period of time. A lot has been done.
Thank you. Okay, cool.
Right, and you have the flyer on the clean energy and climate.
And the electric vehicle.
And then this is, there's a second one on electric vehicles, which is this Saturday. This is actually, I don't know if everybody here is familiar with the Solarize campaigns that have been kind of across, working their way across the region. This is a similar type of campaign that's also being worked on through Sustainable Hudson Valley. but it's focused around electric vehicles and aggregate buys and education around electric vehicles. So they're holding their first consumer workshop this Saturday at the Kingston Center for SUNY Ulster. There is a $25 fee for this workshop, which I don't know why they get to charge. It was interesting at the Sustainable Saturday, the National Drive Electric Week event that the county sponsored, along with a bunch of other groups. We're getting some attention kind of regionally. So some folks came up, a gentleman from North Jersey who's also on the board of the National Electric Vehicle Auto Association, as well as some folks who kind of do like car clubs, like electric vehicle clubs regionally, showed up. So they're actually coming and bringing some cars so that consumers that come to this, potential consumers who come to this workshop can talk to folks who've been driving electric vehicles for a while, see some different electric vehicles. And also there's a pretty well-known website called greencarreports.com, and the person who heads it lives in Saugerties, like, just found this out, mm-hmm. and he's also going to be at this event, just as a resource. So it'll be a good, there'll be a very deep level of expertise around this for folks who are interested.
The gentleman from the Jersey drives a Tesla, and I have the opportunity to sit in his car, and it's an amazing vehicle. Yeah, if anyone has the opportunity.
Everybody would want a Tesla.
Yeah, but to really understand how it's, I mean, it's like a giant iPad run from a car.
The way that it's designed.
So quick, yeah.
Like
too.
Yeah. Came in here.
Yeah.
And as you go forward and you look at the budget, and you'll see more requests, pretty much every sedan that we're purchasing is a plug-in electric, or in fact, we're actually going to pilot an all-electric vehicle as part of that request.
Makes me so happy.
To be honest with you, we're excited because the ones that we currently have in inventory that are driven, Amanda's done a great job training the staff, like the health sanitarians, so here's how you drive these cars and understand how to work them. And we're getting three times the distance on a tank of gas. So not only is it good for the environment, the cost savings are great. And with the federal and now the state incentive, it's one of the reasons why we put so many requests, because, you know, we've got to look at our purchases over the next couple of years. It made sense to buy them with the incentives now.
Yeah.
With the incentives, it's making it less than a normal sedan would be. So,
yeah. When I was on the Woodstock Environmental Commission, we partnered with Solarize and did Solarize Woodstock for solar for homes. And it was really incredible to watch how consumers responded to the aggregate idea. Mm-hmm. And just like, you know, everyone loves a good deal. But people really responded to the idea of, you know, getting, you know, group buy and getting a, you know, better deal. And they even went further to where it was a more community organizing model, to where they had people that had already gone through it, inviting people to their homes and doing open houses, kind of like this, people bringing their cars, letting people experience it. But people responded, and it was successful with
that. I don't know if they know, the state did an aggregate bid for Chevy Bolts. So that's a sticker price of $34,000. It's challenging for municipalities because you don't get the federal tax credit, but the aggregate buy got the price down to $29,000, and then there's a rebate that municipalities are eligible for right now, which is $5,000. So that brings basically the price of that vehicle down to $24,000. And then we're finding, you know, it costs less than half as much to operate that per mile, including the cost of the electricity versus gas. So they're cleaner and, you know,
we're saving a lot of money, which is great.
So,
you know,
it's great.
And even too with the with the electric charging stations, the Amanda's been working with several towns. A lot of towns are interested in going forward. She just worked with the town of Warsing, and they put one at Lidman Park for the tourists that come there. You know, so if any of your towns are interested, there's so many incentives. And quite frankly, and one of the things we're doing, we're going to be doing some more installs to support the fleet vehicles that we're buying, that we've actually bid the electrical work in such a way that any municipality can piggyback off of it and get our pricing, which will be pretty decent. So again, so we're trying to, you know, kind of build some templates some other municipalities could jump on. I know Rosendale has talked to us about having one of their municipal lot. And we're going to, you know, basically they're the incentives are there, the expertise is there through the department, that it makes a lot of sense to partner and help these towns build some infrastructure as well. So.
That's great.
Good. Any other questions? Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
You guys have anything else?
Hey, do you have a question on the flood buyout resolution? I know you're on the CWC.
I do.
Do you want to answer?
Whatever you need.
Do you want to move it?
This is the resolution 403 authorizing.
This is the first one.
This is for the flood buyout. Do you make a motion?
I'll make a motion.
One second.
Move for discussion. Okay. Basically, and can you explain it? Tell us if I'm wrong.
On the board, go for it.
Yeah, well, you know what? There's so many different buyouts. Basically, in order for the New York City to buy out homes in the watershed, it only affects watershed communities. Mm-hmm. Because of the filtration avoidance determination, counties have to approve it. If Ulster County approves this, then towns can opt in. We're not approving any buyouts, but if we don't approve this, the towns cannot opt in to do any buyouts in flood areas that have been flooded. Mm-hmm. So nothing would even come before us again.
No, I think in the simplest term, this allows towns to work with DEQ and target habited buildings.
Right.
Because before it was uninhabitable. This is
businesses too, right?
Certain structures that are very at risk, but whether it's habitable, but they can now add them into this buyout.
And if we don't pass this resolution, the towns can't do it.
Right. And the final decision with regard to the property that we're going about rests with the town of origin.
Right.
And that's what was my question. So under the current MOA, they cannot purchase habitable properties or properties with structures that are habitable.
They can't purchase properties with structures, and they can't purchase properties in hamlet areas.
Okay. And now, with this amendment, that it'll allow them to do that. But when it says with the approval of the community, what does that mean? So
the town.
But I'm saying they would target a property, and then the property owner would agree, or I'm willing to sell, and then the town would have to approve it.
So they would actually not even be doing the targeting. So it would be there's a couple different categories in which buyouts might be eligible. They need to have it can't be piecemeal within a community, within a hamlet area. It can't be just somebody raises their hand and says, I want to be bought out, and the town says, oh, that's okay, and they get bought out. They have to be either within a local flood analysis.
Each town has to do it.
Shandaken, they're doing one for Phoenicia, I should say.
And
they're also doing one for Boyceville.
Yep.
If that were identified as one of the projects that the town wants to progress, like saying, okay, let's remove these four houses from this floodplain, create a bench, do a setback, because that will lower elevations 2 feet across the whole community. Mm-hmm. We believe there's enough of a benefit that we're going to allow these houses to be bought out. Then, and the town accepts that, and the town says, we want that buyout, then it could happen.
Still with the property owner's approval?
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah, but there's no forced buyouts.
Yeah, okay. No.
And some of these projects could be in the millions of dollars. They're not just $20,000 or $100,000. They can be. They'll actually, I think, even move a bridge or put new bridges and put them higher.
This has been thoroughly vetted with the watershed towns. Mm-hmm. They've asked for us to support.
They want us to support.
Yeah.
And the thing is, where CWC, CWT are all on board with this. It's just that so much of kind of the infrastructure that has set up a lot of the rules, for DEP is regulated by the Memorandum of Agreement, regulated by the Land Acquisition Permit, regulated by the Water Supply Permit, that it requires simultaneous...
This is how I describe it.
revision to all of those documents in order to let this program go forward.
Each one is a different thing that you said, and they all overlap a little bit.
Yep.
So your head... I sit in these meetings. I've been on that board for 6 years, and I still get very confused. And the staff up there is obviously amazing, and they know it, but...
They spend their careers...
The FAD's got a few things that the filtration... that a few things that each one, they all kind of intertwine a little bit together, and it's just...
And I think this started, discussions around this started after Irene. Right. And the legislature, along with all the other counties and the Coalition of Watershed Towns, passed a resolution asking that the city of New York move money from the land acquisition program, which they're typically buying, you know, things, you know, 60 acres on the mountainside, you know, blah, 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 that kind of stuff. Move it from that program into a flood buyout program, mm-hmm. a city-funded flood buyout program, because there's been state and FEMA-funded flood buyout programs in the area. And they wanted to give that program a little more flexibility about commercial, about second homeowners that FEMA doesn't allow. So that's what this program, like, is the realization of. It's taken 5 years of negotiation on the language and the terms of it. And there's a little bit of tit for tat, like, rub back and forth as far as the Coalition of Watershed Towns saying that, hey, if we're going to reopen the water supply permit, we want to talk about some of the rules and the watershed rules and regulations.
Yeah, it's
I saw that.
Septic stuff, and that's why, that's where that gets dragged in, because that's another whole element of this.
Amendments to the reduce the regulatory burden.
Yeah, exactly. So that's that was this like big headbutt over the watershed rules and regs, and they said, if we're going to reopen the water supply permit, we want that back on the table, and we want you to say that we're going to make this process a little less onerous.
See, we don't see it down here as much, but when you get up to Shandaken, Olive, that's where the bulk of, you know, those communities.
I think personally, the really good news is that we don't have to administer this one.
Right.
This is, you know, because it's been, you can appreciate the administrative challenge that's been. And this is,
but we will be doing outreach.
Outreach, but not administration. Good thing, so.
Well, like in the town of Olive, you know, I just heard people talking, in down where the Ongore School is, when you go down that hill, and they're actually talking about taking those businesses and going up by my parents' restaurant, right on the opposite side of the DEP property, right where my parents' restaurant, Bread Alone, Fabulous Furniture, and then there's only a few houses. That's all commercial. You could take that town, the supermarkets, and actually move them right up along there.
Right along.
Makes a lot of sense.
That's, you know, the Trail Motel.
I mean, that's obviously if the owners want to do it at the town. It's a huge undertaking, but that's...
Yep. The Trail Motel is one of the properties that Olive would actually be interested in owning that property instead of DEP owning that property.
Well, isn't that where the treatment plant is? It's behind it a little bit. It's not the trail property?
The trail is one of them. It's on the other side of the road, but...
But that's where the sewer treatment plant
is. The advantage to this, too, is that the towns would be able to retain ownership of the property, and that would give them, like, Olive is already thinking about, like, okay, if we have the rail trail that comes up and kind of lands by the Five Arches Bridge, how do we make the best connections to get people into Boyceville? You know, and having some of those properties would leave more of those options on the table for them.
I mean, there's bigger, because the trail from 28 could be a half, three quarters of a mile, so you'd have to build trails actually heading out to 20, which isn't the end of the world, but you'd have to, you know, because people would get lost walking through the woods. I mean,
well, there's a nice synergy going up there right now, like, for example, with the Five Arches Bridge that's being rebuilt.
And this is New York City's money.
Yeah, right. That's being they designed the whole trail thought right into those that new infrastructure, so it makes a lot of sense to have the town have a good school.
So
that's all we got.
It's just because we pass anything, nothing may get done. Because this gives the towns the control to decide.
We're just in the chain of approval. That's
right. Because we were a signatory to the MOA, and because this kind of has to call all the way back to the MOA, all those people, including like the organizations, including like the environmental groups, have to sign on.
And Ulster County now, in 3 years, can't say, "Well, we didn't know what you guys were doing." Mm-hmm. You know, we're everybody's. Yep. Everybody is becomes.
Well, I see it as a positive thing. I don't think there's any controversy surrounding it at all.
Yeah, no, I agree. It could be when the town's doing it. Well, for us, that's their issue. Home rule.
Yeah.
One really good thing about this is that it addresses resilience. We tend to focus on, you know, energy and transitioning the energy system and mitigation, but for the communities like Shandaken and Olive This is a really important way to address resilience.
And I know we put a lot of that thought in. I know Fawn was down to the New Pulse, to the Carmine Liberta Bridge that was open the other day, and that's all in the design right now. I mean, that bridge is rock solid. I mean, it's prepared for, you know, for all the effects of climate change and everything. And, you know, even better, it's we're designing something that's really, you know, a nice tourist draw. It's going to bring more people into the village. But all of the projects we've been working on really think about, you know what's...
That floods in there, because it does flood occasionally.
We notice it's a lot higher, and it's...
Yeah, the old bridge used to sometimes flood.
The old bridge was falling in.
This time.
And the other thing that was really great about that environmentally was the finish that's on that bridge.
Yeah, it has a natural rust finish in it. There's no paint, and it's designed so that over time the rust finish will actually harden and encapsulate the steel. It's actually just a
patina.
Yeah.
I think there's a fancy word.
I think you're going to start seeing a lot more of these. The natural color.
They use it at West a lot.
Yeah, I think it fits fits kind of the vibe of that part of the village with Huguenot Street. I think more and more communities are going to go that direction than the painted bridges. You know, it's galvanized underneath, but it's most of the superstructure is that rough patina. So.
The other thing that impressed me, I was telling him before, is the dignitaries were not even off the bridge, and the people were disassembling the old bridge.
We have a tremendous bridge crew. Everybody should be proud of them. They do a great job.
They did a really great job.
Most counties don't have that kind of in-house resource, and they do a great job. So.
Yeah, that was done pretty quick, too.
It's
crazy. We rented that bridge till December, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to get some money back.
Well, like I said, that was one of the we put some expedience behind it, because we didn't, it's expensive to rent a temporary bridge. We haven't done one since I've been here, so I think it's the first one we've done. So
I don't really remember one either.
Yeah.
No. Do you ever remember a temporary bridge?
No, I remember the temporary pods at the jail. That's the only temporary thing I remember.
I know when we worked with the community, losing that bridge and having a 15-mile detour down to Gardner up to Rosendale would have killed the economy of that village.
Well, can we put a temporary bridge over Lucas Avenue Bridge there in High Falls? Because that's going to be a disaster, too. I think that's a state project.
But. I know we're looking at, for example, we'd love to do one down in Wallkill. We have a huge bridge for this spring coming up, but it just doesn't fit.
Route 52 is doing it. You just detour around.
We looked at it, the county executive looked at it. It's like, the temporary bridge, you know what that did? We opened up 100 yards of beautiful view of the ridge. Like, right. It was amazing, right? So, again, it created a real amenity for the community down there. So.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for letting me.
Thank you. Have a nice evening. Yep. Did it pass the other committee? Economic Development didn't go to theirs yet?
No,
this was last Monday.
Oh, did it pass? Oh, my thanks.
It did, okay.
I don't know if we voted on it. We didn't.
We haven't voted on it.
All in favor?
Aye.
I know that last month Jennifer had some questions, but I think we resolved them.
Right. I think Dennis was at a meeting at Shangum or something. No big deal.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. Yeah, so it never came to us.
Thanks,
guys. Thank you, Amanda.
Thank you.
I think on the resolution it actually says that it passed.
It did? Okay. No, it was last Monday.
So it's on there. Economic Development, October 3rd.
Okay.
Yvonne, you have the amended version?
I have.
Perfect, thank you.
I have the amended version of the last resolution. We didn't amend.
All right, in the morning, just give us a call. We'll send you over the edits if that's easier for you.
Okay, because I have to change it for the packet tomorrow night.
Okay, so call us in the morning and I'll get the break for the
center. All right.
And you'll add those other notes.
Okay, resolution 420, confirming appointment of a member to the Environmental Council. These are two town, Wattletown ones. So, Amanda, you want to make the motion?
No.
Oh, she can. I'll make a motion.
I'll make a motion. I'll second it.
Is that all right?
Yeah, whatever. I'm
working. We'll get Amanda on the committee next year. Okay, any discussion on it?
That was just...
All in favor?
420 or
420.
Okay.
This is just housekeeping, really. Okay. 421, confirming an appointment to the member of the Environmental Management Committee.
I moved it.
Tracy moved it.
Second.
Ron seconded it. These are two Marlton folks. So.
Marlton's great.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Okay.
All right. And Fawn, thank you for putting all this stuff together. You make the meetings go really smooth with all the work. You put everything you need to look at. So.
Plastic bags.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to go to new business. Actually, this is kind of old business.
Yeah. So you all have the draft, and then section's not included in the current draft.
Yeah, I could not look online today.
I only had my phone, and I could not download it.
Well, actually, I sent Fawn the wrong draft. I sent her an unsaved draft, and luckily Fawn saw that, because otherwise we wouldn't even have the right draft here tonight. So then Fawn resent it in the middle of the day after I got her the right one. So I'm grateful for that. So, okay, so as we discussed, can I just tell everybody what we did? So as we discussed at the last meeting, I wanted to get, as directed by the committee, something on paper so that we could all work through it. Some of the things, the separate sheet, the sections not included, were, because I just had to make a judgment call, so I went based on what I recalled us talking about. And also, as I was looking at other examples, there were things, which we'll get to, that I wanted to put open for discussion for the committee, whether or not we were going to include. So I don't know how you want to move through it, Rich, if you want to start at the beginning and just
so you know where both of the things are, they're paper clipped together. So the draft is on the front, and then there's a separate sheet on the back that has the sections that aren't included in the draft.
Right. Do you have a copy, Tom?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was just reviewing it.
Okay, yeah, Trace, you want to go over it?
Okay, so again, everything's open for discussion, so that's why we're here. I titled it just based on what it was, but then this was an homage to you, Rich, in the actual title, the Reusable Bag Promotion Act, because it's positive rather than negative.
There you go.
So, but we could call it whatever we want, since it's just a title.
I like
so.
That.
I used, I modeled after Tom's Marbletown proposal for a lot of the intent and findings, which that's just background language. You know, we go through all the basically, they're the equivalent of whereas is in a resolution. So if we can get, and then in definition, I made some executive decisions just in terms of, because a lot of the different laws use different language, covered store, retail outlet, et cetera. So again, I'm open as everyone looks at this, if everyone wants to get back to me via email, if they, you know, have some suggestions for change in terms of the definitions. But the most critical of the definitions is in the definition of plastic carryout bag. I think we learned from Jordan that we need to be clear that we mean a single-use plastic bag that's less than 2.25 mils thick, because there are certain reusable bags that are plastic, and we want to make that distinction in the definition in particular. In the definition of the prohibited plastic bag, I put in the exemptions, and that's essentially the bags that are not point-of-sale bags. So in a store, when you're putting your apples or your spinach into a bag at the produce section, or if you're using a plastic bag to separate your meats from everything else, or if you're at a hardware store and you're given a bag with your nails, or all of that, this is not regarding that. This has to do with the bag provided to you essentially at checkout. And it also does not, I didn't go in to question this, but every piece of legislation I saw exempted garment bags at dry cleaners. So I just put that in as exemption, because I just figured if San Francisco and Los Angeles,
right,
and
must have been upside.
There must have been some reason, and it would probably entail them retooling their whole businesses, mm-hmm. their whole business model, so I left that. And I also, because it could be argued that when you go to a pharmacy and you're handed a bag to put your prescription in, your prescription's given to you in a bag, which is often paper, but since we're regulating paper, I put that in as an exempted bag, because I saw it as an issue of privacy more than anything else, and we don't want it. While it is point of sale, we don't want you to have to pay for that or choose to have your prescriptions, mm-hmm. you know, visible to the public. So that's the most critical in the definitions. And the rest
stores.
Well, no, liquor stores. Yeah, I was going to. About liquor stores?
Yeah, so I researched. State laws that require.
No, that's wrong. I researched that.
Well, no, for convenience stores that sell beer.
No.
A six pack has to be.
No. Mm-mm. It's not true.
They always say it's a law.
It could be a store policy.
Yes.
And that's it. But I was an ABC law instructor when I was on the job, and there is nothing in there that indicates that you're required. By law, to have a bag to carry.
I specifically researched it, and what they expect that it's carryover from is open container laws. So, you know, if you were getting a beer or something that you intended to drink against the law, just out that you want it in a bag, and it's a trickle down from that. But there's in fact no law requiring that. You can ask to just carry it out in your arms.
If you buy a six pack, they're like, I'm like, I don't want it. This is a waste of a bag. It has a handle, and they're like, no, we have to, and they not put this true. Big butt bag around.
Yeah, not true. So, so I left that out. Now the one thing that we're going to have to discuss further, which I think is a big issue that we need to decide, is covered stores. So based on our previous conversation, this draft includes all stores. So it's listed as including but not limited to drug stores, pharmacies, grocery stores, supermarkets, apparel stores, home centers, hardware, everything, all stores, similar to New Paltz's ban. There are examples and prominent examples nationwide where really what they're targeting is essentially supermarkets, grocery, convenience stores dealing in food, and specifically exempting restaurants. That's a common example that I've seen in the legislation. There are also examples where it's the stores I just mentioned, plus stores over a certain size footprint and over a certain annual threshold in terms of sales. So basically they're including places like Best Buy and Macy's. We, in the last conversation, I thought came around to saying, well, if they're bad, they're bad. But I think there's a lot of ways to tackle it. We can choose to do everybody at the same time. We can choose to roll it out. We can choose to start with the grocery stores and the bigger stores, and then 6 months expand to similar to the way we did with the polystyrene foam, where it began for chain stores and then went to every mom and pop, for lack of another term. It's really a question both of what this committee wants to move forward and what we think can pass the legislature as a whole. I think that a more expansive ban probably results in a greater reduction just by sheer numbers, but I think that even the ban with just the grocery store is pretty substantial gain. And the one last thing I want to say is that I also saw examples of places, in fact, I want to say San Francisco, where they started not with a rollout, but they started with a ban on food, basically on grocery and food and big box stores. And when they found it was working, whatever, a year later, they amended the law to include everyone. So they didn't have it in the law from the get-go, but they amended it at a later date. So all different kinds of things are out there. It's a question of what we want to do.
My first thought is in terms of whether it's just big box stores first or small. Like I see here, we're directing the 10 cents back to the store. I mean, as long as they're getting retaining the 10 cents, does it really make a difference in terms of cost to that store? Because if they're retaining it, whether you're big or small, you're still retaining your cost.
I think it might be a question of education, but these laws where there's a ban in combination with a charge, mm-hmm. in no uncertain terms, result in a savings to all the retail establishments.
That's what I
because
remember.
Because they, one, don't have to buy the plastic product anymore, and two, they're recouping the cost for what they do have, and they can turn to legislation and say, we're required to do this. So for the retailer, while it might not seem like a benefit if they're just seeing it on his face.
Yeah.
This, as it's written, is definitely...
Because I think this is actually where, I mean, there really is an advantage, big or small, because they're seeing the savings. But also, in terms of my next thought was, and I don't know the answer to this, but my first initial thought was that an all-out, you know, right from the get-go, rather than phasing in bit by bit, would be more educated. I mean, it would just, you know, instead of phasing it out, I'm curious what, in terms of response and education and public awareness, I almost feel like a one-time sweep would be more educational and have a broader reach than confusing the public and putting a bigger onus on us to track.
To make sure who knows who's doing what.
One sweep would seem just more on, because I think we do have a strong, we've talked about this, our responsibility on the education side, and we have to be able to, I think, actually achieve that.
Right.
And I think it makes it difficult on our end to do that if we're doing section by section and stretching it out over time rather than this clean swoop.
No,
this is my thought.
What about with the charging, what if we make it optional? The store wants to charge to get their 10 cents, they can charge. They don't want to charge, they don't have to charge. I mean, I don't think, I actually just thought about that driving here tonight. I go, if somebody comes and they maybe don't have a lot of money, they can say we're not charging you.
But then that concerns me with that.
Listen, I don't think a charge is going to pass the legislature, to be honest with you.
I just think, though, my concern with that is that then I think we now... Where before, if they were both the small mom and pop shop was retaining the 10 cents in the big shop,
but
now
mom and pop is going to charge you. My parents aren't going to charge you 10
cents
to walk out of there.
But I'm saying then they have
a bag of, you know, three hamburgers in a bag. They're not going to charge you 10 cents.
Yeah, but then we're giving them the argument that they can say, well, Macy's can afford to eat the 10 cent charge, whereas.
But that's a business decision they make.
Can't. But I think now we're starting to give an advantage, like them an argument to. Call say there's a bigger disadvantage.
Okay, but
if you make the charge optional, then all you have is the plastic bag ban. I mean, that's really, it's the same thing. Now, I agree.
It's pretty, that's our main goal,
right? Well,
is to ban plastic bags.
But as we discussed last time, if you only have the plastic bag ban, then you increase. I mean, so
you increase cost to the retailers. It's a burden. I think the argument.
Right.
To the
a million laws will increase.
But I mean,
I think the argument would become
that we're hurting business if we do that, because
if it's optional, we're not hurting them. They can make their own decision. Then
you're hurting them because by competitive reasons, they can't charge for each other. See, if you force everybody to do it,
I know what you're saying. Listen, I get it, but competitive reasons, somebody can sell.
Because they can charge now. They have the ability to charge
they
down.
Do.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So we know that they won't.
Right, because of competition.
Right, if you... so.
Listen, I get it. To me, the charging part isn't out of the goodness of our heart because we feel sorry for the retail stores. They're huge companies, most of them, that they're buying them anyway. They're making this expense. So they obviously aren't going broke by buying them today. So... I've just spoken to three or four people, and that seems to be the argument, is why are we going to charge people? Make people charge for something they're getting free today. If the object is to get plastic bags out of the waste stream, and I get the bigger picture, is we want everybody using reusable bags.
Yeah, that is the real
But thing. This is a walk. It's not a sprint.
Yeah.
It's a slow process. If we get rid of the plastic bags in a month, that's a huge win. It's a huge win for everybody. The 10 cents... is okay. Let Tom, and then Ron, and then
The other reason for the charge again is if you only ban plastic, you will almost certainly be sued by the plastics industry on the grounds that you're not treating all bags fairly. That doesn't mean you're going to lose.
Ulster
will be sued almost positively if you do that. That's one of the reasons to do that. Oh, and potentially by the Grocers Association.
But we're not banning brown bags.
No. If you ban only plastic, this is history.
But that's what we're doing, is only banning plastic. We're not brown.
But if you
we're
ban
not banning
plastic
brown bags.
And put the fee in, it protects you.
I don't know. I understand what you're saying, but I think that's a weak, it'd be a lawsuit-wise, a pretty weak argument, because nobody had plastic bags when we were growing up.
Well, I mean, often those suits do fail.
And they can buy plastic bags that
are... I agree with you. Those suits often do fail. They have.
I'm just trying to think of something to get past.
But Hastings on Hudson, for instance, was just sued about because they had a plastic bag ban. They did win, actually, mainly because the suit was dismissed for lack of standing. It was sued by the Grocers Association and the only grocery store in the town closed. But, of course, these things are successfully defended by people who, by municipalities, by regions that pass these laws. But you will be sued. That's simply what you're saying.
it'll be a cost.
Yeah, it's a cost.
Even if you win, there'll still be a cost.
Right.
Let Ron go.
Well, just, again, speaking on the 10-cent deposit, or whatever you want to call it, I just disagree with that totally. And one of my main concerns is the people that can't afford to buy an apple, much less to buy a bag. I just have a problem with that. And, most of us are fortunate where we can buy the bag and the apple. There are people out there that can't. And that's a concern, a major concern of mine.
Okay.
So two things. First, to the no fee as a broader issue, and then I definitely want, I think we should talk about what you just brought up too, Ron. I think that if we really are going to go down the idea, the other reason to have a fee on paper bags is that paper bags aren't, I mean, there's an energy cost to them. They're, they're more of an expensive product. They're not exactly an ideal alternative. Really, what we are trying to promote is getting people to use reusable. And so if you keep the habit of just readily accessible free bags, albeit not plastic, now paper, it may not change as many habits. It will take plastic out of the circulation, but it won't change habits in the same way. That's the first thing. The second point to and I think if we are going to go down that road, I am concerned about how we impact small businesses. I think the only way to tackle a ban without a fee, even though it's not my ideal choice, but if it's the way that we end up making this work, would be only in the grocery stores and the big boxes, not so much the mom and pops and the hardware stores and everywhere else to start, because I think then you really could be, there's a clear argument for, as Tom said, the fact that competitively you'd be forced to eat the cost, and now you'd have extreme increases in your cost for a small business with small bottom line.
But the margins are higher in a small business. So an extra 10 cents.
Well, I think it could be hundreds of
cents. In a grocery store, you get 10 or 12 or 14 bags. In a retail store, you're getting one bag, maybe two.
Maybe, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but to Ron's other point, almost all examples of these laws exempt, and that's on my, if you look on my page where the section's not included in the current draft, almost all examples, I left it out because the way we left the discussion last month was wanting to include everyone because it was about changing habits, not wanting to be insulting, etc. But it is true that almost all examples of legislation, regardless of the kind, exempt persons, in our case, in this state, it'd be TANF and SNAP. So anyone who's on any kind of supplemental program, any kind of card, anything would be exempted from that fee. And we could certainly, I think there's a strong argument to put it in the legislation, because I don't think you're alone in that feeling. I can see both sides of the argument, because I also can see that, that changing habits, and I've done it myself. I mean, you can get reusable bags that last 100 uses in oftentimes for free, because they're given away by all kinds of places. And not to mention, the sort of the European model of shopping, which is what's used at places like BJ's, is you just bring a cardboard box. What's strange is, and it takes some. I'm trying to change my own habits in terms of takeout food, because I don't. And part of it is like an appearance thing. Like I'm not self-conscious, but I either forget. But I'm also aware when I do bring my own Tupperware, and then I'm finished, and I have my own Tupperware, and I put my food in. It's like it looks weird to people. Well, it also looked weird to people to have your own bag before. 5 years ago. When you went with your own bag, you were one of five people, and it seemed like, why are you bringing your own bags? They give you bags free. But now it's changing. So I could go either way, but I certainly feel like if I don't think you're going to be alone, Ron, in that thought, which is why I think that's putting the exemption in.
That's why I'm worried. I don't think it'll pass, honestly, right now. That's and I'm – I mean, I –
But I think
I actually agree with you.
I've been calling some people. And then we say, in 1 year, we do an analysis. We come, you know, from the grocery stores, what they're, and then we can move from there. Or we put. I don't know. I don't have a problem with it. I just, of the four or five people I spoke to, they have no problem. A couple of them were nervous about passing it, but I think that's not wouldn't be an issue. But I think you add the your mandatory charge. I think you're going to lose them.
Well. Why don't we try to craft what we think what we as a committee can live with, and before we put it in, we reach out to our individual caucuses, you know, and we see where we think it's going to shake out and where the concern is, you know, and because I'd rather us not amend right now for the rest of the legislature. That's my I'd rather us get on the same page in this committee and then come back before we put it in and make them and say this is hey I'm hearing from such and such and such. I'll do outreach too. I mean I'll call every legislator if I have to. Some legislators I know just where they're going to fall based on their ideology to a certain degree anyway, but I believe most legislators have an open mind, and so I know that
pass something after 1 year it's 5 cents, after three years it's 10 cents. You know, I mean, there's all things we can do.
I'm just worried about protecting the businesses as well, and that's it. Took me a long time, even when I went to the Marbletown Forum, I went in, as did Hector, who went because I couldn't speak, and I went in thinking that what I supported was the ban alone. And as I listened to the presentation, I realized not only is having the fee more effective, but it's more, I mean, we're a pro-business community. I don't want to hurt our businesses with this. I want to do the right environmental thing and allow our businesses to thrive.
But they are
buying them today. Yes, but they would be, but what would happen if you ban plastic bags, then they have to buy more paper.
I get that.
And they have to feed a habit that we're trying to change at a greater cost to them.
I get that.
In this model, they actually save money.
Right.
They actually save money, and they get to say, "This is a this is a requirement."
They'd probably love for everybody to bring reusable because they'd.
It'd be great. Yeah, it'd be great.
I get that.
And I think that's part of the educational part because we need to have these retailers as a partner in the encouragement of. Because I think we even say
I put
in
that
the
language in
we
there
encourage
too.
The retailers.
I don't think the retailers would be opposed to it.
Yeah.
Like I said, I spoke to Emmanuel, and he's like, he was a little nervous if it was just in Marbletown, but he said.
Right.
If it was countywide, he goes, I'll stand up with you guys in a press release and support it. He goes, I'll stand with all you guys. So, now he's a one person, but he didn't have an issue with it at all if it's a countywide,
Did he not have an issue with the ban or with the also with the fee?
I didn't ask about the fee. I can reach out to him, though.
But,
I mean, just a ban, even if he had to buy the paper bags himself.
Right, no, he's always been...
He was like, no problem, and then I'm sure if I said, it was a 10-10 charge, I don't know what he'd say,
right,
but I don't think he would be opposed to it.
I would be very interested in that.
I'll call him tomorrow. He's mad at me now. I beat him in my fantasy football head-to-head last week, so
can we tiptoe
around his store now.
Can we talk about Ron's Ron's concern and the possibility of an exemption? What does the rest of the committee think?
I was back and forth. I expressed it last meeting about but also, I mean, we're talking about ideology and the ability to get things passed, there's people ideologically that have a lot of concerns with increasing, any type of what they call quote unquote handouts through the SNAP program or food stamps. So I'm just curious what the reaction will be if, yes, I totally agree with understanding the need for people that don't have the means, but will there be then, are we then creating another reaction from those who say, well, then here's another handout, we're just giving another handout at the cost of business owners? I mean, I'm just like, there are people with that ideology.
I think that's a possibility, but I think it's more likely you're gonna hear the concern that Ron's raised about the cost of an apple, and it's well taken, it's well articulated.
I would hope that would be the number one concern over the other.
Well, actually, I think the people that have those benefits would have less. You know what I mean? Like people that can't, that don't go get benefits or whatever. They're really the ones that would have more of an issue than the ones.
We have people
that have
out there just living on a Social Security, a small Social Security.
Yeah,
check.
Yeah.
I mean, ideally, we need to change
their thinking.
But
they're not going to be exempt unless they actually have gotten.
Well, that's if we don't have a fee, then they're exempt, right?
Yeah.
Nobody.
All right.
If you even add to the exemption,
I mean,
you
know, we don't have a fee
an
for
age
anybody.
Limit,
that's
you
what
know,
we need.
Over the age of 65.
I think that this is actually both of these two issues we've been talking about are cases where our instincts are actually not aligned with reality.
I mean, you could do it.
People who cannot afford an apple or can barely afford an apple will buy one apple, and guess what? They don't need a bag because they only bought one apple. They also are much more price sensitive than the rest of us. That 10 cents fee, they will have their reusable bag with them. I'll forget mine, you'll forget yours sometimes, but these people will never forget their reusable bag. Yeah, exactly, because it's, that 10 cents is really important to them. So while we feel like we're hurting them, the people who get hurt are the people who can take it. Now, the problem with this is, of course, we have to make that case that I just made to everyone on the legislature. It's the educational piece that's really hard. As long as I'm speaking, I'd also like to on the phasing it in and getting this passed. I mean, I've been thinking about how, because I've been having the same trouble in my town. This once you see the fee, everyone just gets their check.
Yeah.
So I have a couple of ways I've thought about doing this. One is you just put the fee at 1 cent and have it go up slowly. So once it's at 1 cent, we don't have any research that shows how effective it'll be. But if it's there, in fact, Jordan doesn't think 1 cent would be effective at changing behavior. But I think you could combine like a 1 cent fee with a mandatory rebate for bringing a reusable, which no one's really... Mandatory rebates for reusables are also not effective. Mm-hmm. But if you have the 1 cent fee for every like bag you get,
a light goes off every time.
Yeah, it's just sort of like, and
it's a good idea.
I think this might be a lot easier to get through. Unfortunately, we don't have any research on how that design type of law would do because no one's done it. But I think it would be a lot easier to pass.
That's a really interesting suggestion, even if it's phased.
Phasing slowly. And you could change it so that you could phase it so that the difference between the mandatory rebate and the fee is always a minimum of 10 cents. And then, for instance, a store that charges 10 cents doesn't have to give you money back for bringing your reusable. A store that charges 5 has to give you 5 cents back. You can phrase it that way.
I'm not loving the mandatory rebate, just both because it's been shown not to be effective, and two, I think I just try to imagine being a retailer, and now we're banning plastic bags. We're making you charge for paper. We're making you give money. It just seems like a lot of regulation. I like the.
But they would have the choice. You see, it's because they'd say, okay, you can do a once if you have a really low fee, then you wouldn't have to give. Then you would have to give a rebate. If you have a high fee, then you can forget about the rebate.
How much does a brown bag cost? If you
about 10 cents,
a little less.
Eight cents. 15, but his are really nice.
Yeah, and I read 8.
And he tries to buy as many as some of the bigger.
Yeah, stores. And so like the really small stores might have.
Eight standard.
But his are really nice.
No doubt.
And I think he's a small.
I always reuse his. Yeah. You know, when I go somewhere else, I just put the stuff in, I get a nice spot.
One other thing I wanted to point out that I put in here that I didn't put in others, which made me think just in terms of when you talked about people bringing their own bags, there's nothing in the law prohibiting you from bringing any bag. So the bag you bring can be a non-reusable plastic bag that you got in Dutchess County. You have a stack of, or that you bought a whole bunch of cheapo plastic bags with handles.
They just can't put beer in it.
you're not prohibited from bringing that. So I don't. Where are we at with exemptions? No, I don't mean the finance. I mean the TANF and SNAP and.
Oh, you know what? If it's a penny, I don't see a reason to have an exemption, or 2 cents or something.
Yeah, I think that's.
I mean, listen. If it's a penny or two, and somebody comes up with food and they don't have the money, they're not going to charge them for it. Yeah. You know, they're not going to make them put the food back, mm-hmm. and say the bag's back. They're going
to. But are we crazy in saying that if the average cost is 8 to 10 cents? And we're banning plastic bags, and we're giving retailers per cent back what they're paying for the bags, that's a significant, that's going to be a savings out of the retailer's overhead, mm-hmm. which in terms of traditional economics, you would say would be passed down in savings elsewhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could make that argument.
It's argued all through.
So that's another thing. Not that I'm not against the idea of keeping it 2 cents, but if we're now pretty much covering their cost for supplying bags, so that's an overhead savings. They're literally going to be paying zero for bags now.
What about if we set a minimum of 5 cents?
Or listen, I'm fine with it. We gotta get 13 votes. 12. The Marbletown board is a sharp, bright group, but they get nervous. But they're a great group.
But I think that's a good.
But you get nervous because you just don't.
But
no.
What I'm confused is what makes everybody nervous about it? Is it because the consumer is going to? I mean, really, what we're trying to do is change habits. So is it that the consumer is going to have to pay an extra 25 cents every time they go to the store if they refuse to change their habit, if they refuse to bring a bag or they refuse to bring a box?
See, I think the biggest argument is the considerations what Legislative Lap brought up, because I think the human impact is the biggest issue. Because if I go to, like I said last meeting, my communities in Woodstock and West Turley and Glenford are served by a mom-and-pop market. We know the closest supermarket is Kingston. Mm-hmm. Same if you go up, some of them even go to the up across from the high school. But if I go to the people that own those stores and I say, hey, what would you think if you wouldn't have to pay for bags anymore? That's going to be a savings to you. We're going to charge back the 10 cents. We're going to ban plastic bags. Your overhead's actually going to see savings because you no longer have that cost. I mean, that's pro-business to me. I mean, I think they would be like,
right.
You know, I think but business arguments.
But 180,000 residents are well, going to, maybe, even though it's not much money,
well, no, but that's
it wouldn't
what
bother
think.
Me, but... For no. some people, they just
well, that's what I'm saying.
Against
no.
it. You know,
the thing
even
we
if they've got $1 million, they're against it.
It's not the business side of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's but then if we do all of a sudden say we're doing 2 cents, now they are getting, you know, they're not getting that. So, I mean, we have to figure out, because if we do a 10 cent fee,
we want reusable bags, 100%. That's what this whole goal is. It's not about. I mean, listen. At the beginning, there's no doubt it's going to be adjustment. People aren't just going to snap and do reusable bags because you can't use plastic bags. As long as they get a bag, 95% of the people, that's all I care about. They got something to put their food in.
Mm-hmm.
But ideally, it'd be nice to go to cardboard boxes that they just took out all their food out of, to put those up front and use those, mm-hmm. or have people use a reusable bag. I mean, that's the end result. And, you know, maybe they have to, you know, I don't know. I mean, if we work with Tim and get bags, we can give each retailer 1,000 bags and say, hey, give these to your best customers that come in for free, and then they're not using brown bags. You know, they're using reusable every day. I don't know. I'm just thinking.
I'm just saying I'm not worried. I'm more worried about Ron's viewpoint than I am about the viewpoint of the business side of it and being bad for business.
I think the business side. I think the business side would come out if all you do is ban plastic bags.
Yeah, well, that's,
do you know what I mean? Like, if you just
put the mayor
already
what
said
the
he was fine.
Is.
He told me he was fine with it.
I think he's the exception.
Yeah, I think it's gonna. I think it'd be a big. I'm
but
not
they
so
know
worried
it's
about
the
lawsuit,
way it's going. Big industries know. The retailers, they know.
But they have fought it. They have sued. I mean, and they've sued recently. It's not like
yeah.
Okay, so,
Mayor, you're next. Okay, but no, you. Okay, Mayor, go.
Well, the bottom line is really what we need to be looking at is not so much the retailers and the people as what our legislators feel.
Well, that's right.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, so well, maybe we should really feel out with people what they would, what mm-hmm. where they stand on it. So then we can kind of come up with, like, whether we want to go 10 cents or
listen,
three or a nickel or whatever.
I think if you did an outright ban and didn't charge for paper bags, I think it would pass overwhelmingly, if not unanimous or very close to unanimous. When you start adding the fees, then you're going to start losing some people. The higher the fee, the more people you're going to lose.
But maybe we can feel out.
And Tom can tell you that because he's dealing with it in Marlborough. So Tom can tell you, you know, which is, other than maybe Woodstock and New Paltz is the most, you know, progressive town, it's difficult. So combine this with the rest of the county.
Let me ask you a question. If we just, if that's the case, if what you are suggesting is true, and the bulk of the legislature would support an outright ban, but not,
I think,
the,
but, I, I'm
but
not saying,
but,
myself,
but I'm saying, but I'm saying
you,
if that's
it,
the case, I mean, that as you've stated already, that's a giant step, and the reality is, it to a certain degree, businesses would have to decide whether or not through competition to bear that cost, whether
or
not they
2 cents.
Whether
I
or not
that,
they charge.
I think the baby step is a great idea, and then we revisit it next year. I don't know. I mean,
I think we do have to go back to our caucuses and reach out and talk to and educate people about the both sides of the discussion. But if we were to do does this committee want to stick to covering all stores? I guess that's the first question.
I'm fine with it, but whatever the people, whatever you guys want. And again, we should talk to everybody. I mean,
we
gotta
come
up
with some
my parents' restaurant. You know, they maybe got 8 to-go orders a day or 6. It's mm-hmm. irrelevant whether it's, you know, it's not going to affect mm-hmm. him. Is it going to affect Sears and JCPenney and Home Depot? They use a lot of. They don't. I mean, they do use plastic more, but they also use.
But they deal with laws like this in other jurisdictions.
Those big, right? Those big places. I mean, I just think the mom and pop small places. I don't think they're going through a lot. I mean, my parents aren't real busy, but it's to them. It's so you get a stack of brown bags.
That's what Hector said has been the experience in
and they use
new
boxes
balls.
Too. Yeah, I mean, a lot of Chinese restaurants use the boxes. Come in.
Whenever we get food from the diner, they always put it in the box.
Yeah, I don't care unless we want to do stores over a certain square footage in the first year, and then the second year it gets expanded. I'm open for any discussion. I'm not.
I mean, I think John's point about the phase in being a challenge in terms of education. There is some benefit to having it all kind of drop at once. The question is. For me, I think it's a question of whether we do or don't have the fee. Because if we don't have the fee, I'm more concerned about hurting the small businesses. And if we do have the fee, then I'm unconcerned.
Businesses are going through so many less.
But Emmanuel is an example. Emmanuel is a small business, but they use a lot of bags, and they'd see their overhead rise substantially. Do they have no plastic bags right now?
No, he does.
Okay, so they'd see it right. A store like Adams is a, you know, it's not a chain store. It's run by a family, and right now, I bet on balance they move more plastic than paper, and they would have to switch everything to paper, which we know costs whatever 6 times the price, 10 times the price. So it's a lot. I mean, it's hundreds of dollars.
I think more people use paper than plastic.
They might because they're nice bags.
I always get paper there, and I know my son always gets paper. So
where's your reusable bag?
Well, when I write
it,
I'm
joking.
You don't think to bring it in there, bring it to Bridgetown.
Ron's going to go straight out of people because sorry, collecting somebody. Okay, Ron's got something in it.
Do some research with a little help. And there is a New York State law governing this reduction, the reuse and recycling of plastic bags. And reading this on its face, I didn't research it totally, I don't see anywhere in here where they charge or where it's required to charge a fee for any type of plastic.
Is that a proposed law?
This is a law. It's Article Title 27. It's on the books right now.
Of DEC?
Yes.
Yeah, which has to do with recycling, having recycling containers. It doesn't regulate.
Well, it's pretty, I mean, it mirrors a lot of the local law, the proposed local law.
but it doesn't regulate that you can't have plastic bags. It just says that if you have plastic bags, then you have to have a recycling
correct
container. That's well,
isn't
all
that, isn't that what we're... Isn't that the goal, though, to recycle it? And
No, not at all. In fact, recycling, and I'm actually going to do some outreach myself because this law, there's not even any reporting required. It just says you have to keep your own information. I mean, I don't even know if Hannaford, for example, or any given store that has those boxes that I bring excess plastic bags to, I don't even know if they actually recycle them, because the reality is it costs more to recycle plastic bags because the film is so thin than it costs to make them.
Right.
And
wow.
And the quantities required, similar to styrofoam, to make it valuable are exorbitant. So while there are successful tiny examples of plastic bag recycling, this law just requires that all big box stores in the state have a, and you see it when you go into Lowe's, you go into a supermarket or any big store, that if they provide plastic bags, they have a receptacle for recycling. It doesn't require that they say where they send it, doesn't require that they report, it doesn't require anything really. It's when I read it, I was actually surprised by how flimsy it was, because I thought the recycling requirement would have some teeth from DEC, but it doesn't, unfortunately, it doesn't really, and it makes me question my own recycling efforts of this, because I bring up all the plastic film and all styrofoam, you know, like
they
what's it called?
They take it all.
They take it, but they don't. But I don't know. I'm not
right.
sure
they
what they actually do with it. So, but this doesn't regulate that. It doesn't prohibit plastic bags in any way at all.
Correct.
In addition to what Legislator Bartels was saying, is that also that once they do enter our facilities, is that they wreak havoc on our machinery.
Yeah.
And,
so now,
you know, that's an addition. Like, it's just
I support a ban. I just think we need to. We want to come up with something that we can pass.
If a ban without a fee, I don't think it's the smartest legislation. But if a ban without a fee is the only way to get it passed, I would do that.
I just
concerned
out
for the business.
Cents and or a penny, two, and three, and then
mitigate it somehow,
and then go from there
and have it roll out to a higher fee.
I don't have a problem with that.
Mary, where are you at? What do you think?
I mean, I'm open to what'll get passed.
Okay.
So. Oh. I mean, everything has a little bit of concerns, but you know, I think the bottom line is we want to, our ultimate goal is what we want. So, and I think it's just gonna ultimately gonna be what the pleasure of the legislature is, what we can, you know. What
and I believe
I'll call
in people.
Ken. I'll speak to Ken tomorrow. I'll give him a call. Ron, just see. Wait, let me do this. He had his hand up. Sorry.
So the county EMC council had its first discussion on this topic last month. We're going to bring it up again next week, actually. Just as a background, everybody's in favor of getting rid of plastic bags. That's easy. All stores, that's across the board. We had the same sort of discussion about fees that you're having here. Rollout, that was a positive thing. And there was... pluses and minuses about exemptions to Medicaid and that kind of thing. So we're going to have an additional discussion about that next week. But part of that discussion, and this is where I wanted to go with this, is we're going to instruct each of the representatives of the towns to try to get to their representatives and their town boards as part of the idea of getting additional information back and to try to promote the basic concept. So that's just another way that we're going to try to help you outreach to your legislatures.
That's great.
That's great.
Yeah, no, that's really good. Okay, thanks. Let Ron and then Jeff.
Just based on the reusable containers, I'm concerned with cross-contamination. If you read this article, they did some studies on it. Obviously, you're going to... With your meats, especially, it's going to be the...
You don't put your meats in there, right?
Well, in the how are you going to get it home if it's a reusable one? You know?
You have an extra one?
Right. Yeah. That's all right. I mean,
well, you would have one that you would just use for that. You would have a reusable
but
bag.
That's my point. That's my point.
In Tracy's law, in the very beginning, she said there's an exemption for small plants and trays for meats.
And also, I mean, I this.
But doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose? If you're doing a small plastic bag for meats? And
No. I mean, we know that right now the shopping habits, I feel there was always, when I think back being a child shopping when there wasn't plastic bags at the checkout, there were plastic bags. My dad, I shopped with my dad. He was like the only dad at the supermarket on the weekend. And he would, you know, there were plastic bags to put in, like I said, your apples. In those days, people didn't put their wrapped meat into a bag because there wasn't the same kind of concern and or awareness. I mean, some of I've been using my reusable bags for a long time, and at Marbletown we heard this issue raised and I did some research. I mean, one of my, just on the fast, I looked to the back and this is sponsored by the Chemistry Council, which is an offshoot of the, you know, plastics industry, et cetera. So, you know, a lot of these studies I feel like are pushed by a resistance to stop the proliferation of plastic bags. That's the first problem. Just as a consumer myself, I mean, I don't follow necessarily the best practices because I often use the heavyweight reusable plastic bags and I don't spray them down all the time, but I can, and I don't wash them every trip, and I have no evidence that we've ever gotten sick from it. But certainly fabric bags you take home and you can wash them, you know, and you could just be mindful of separating. I mean, I think that the benefits of changing habits and taking plastic bags out of the system, I mean, these are relatively single-use plastic bags are a new advent. They're in my lifetime. And similar to plastic, you know, water. I mean, when I was growing up, we didn't have, like, water by the bottle. And just what it's done to both the environment and the systems, like we've heard Tim Rose, and we've seen it. I know you've been on those tours at all the various facilities around the state. What plastic bags do? It's a lot of
I just think the single use. I think that's kind of a farce because I know I do, and I'm sure you know most people do. It's just not a single use. I use the basic bag that I get at the supermarket for several other type of things at my house. You know, I store stuff in it. You know, it's garbage, some type of trash goes in it. You know, so you can get 3 or 4 uses out of a single-use bag. So I don't buy the fact that when you go to the store and you get a single-use bag, it's done, it's over with. I don't.
You mean plastic?
That. Plastic.
You
right.
Reuse the plastic ones. Or the cardboard. Or
the single use. The one we're talking about, the plastic single use bag.
Both of them would be single use, right? The paper one.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about plastic.
No, but I mean.
So my point is, there is more than one use out of a single use bag.
Even if you get 10 uses, though, when it goes into landfill, it causes havoc. Mm-hmm. And that's great, you do 10 or 3 or 4, but a lot of people just take it, throw right in the garbage. Mm-hmm. And
we're talking about billions of bags. It's not, you know, I mean, this is not insubstantial. When each of us go to a supermarket and you watch those carts coming out and 25 bags in a cart, mm-hmm. you know, and how many trips a different time and how many people, it's a lot.
We kind of moved on. I'm still thinking about fees. That's what I like about this discussion, though, because like my brain, I've literally gone like 100 different views on this policy. But I think the concept of a fee, something like, so we're establishing, and I'm thinking about how we can pitch it. We've established that it's 8 cents for the retailer per bag. If you take plastic bags out, it's going to be a saving because they don't have to buy those. But we don't have to necessarily fund the full 8 cents. So, but we can also mitigate the cost of increase and still achieve the idea of the consumer psychology of 1 cent, 99 cents sounds better than a dollar. Mm-hmm. So you could do something. So if you cut it in half, you know, a 4 cent fee, you know, you're still mitigating the increased cost. But also, you know, assuming the savings they get from plastic bags. We don't have to cover the full, you know, cost of bags. But yet, to the consumer, 4 cents is a lot better than 10 cents.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're talking about these fees, and we all know that this is already factored into the price of the groceries we buy. That bag fee is already, it's built into the overhead costs. So now we're going to put another fee on top of a fee. You're already paying for it once, and now you're paying for it a second time based on a deposit or however you want to call it. The bag's already paid for. Emmanuel pays 15 cents a piece for a bag. You don't think that's not factored into the product that he sells there? I'm pretty certain it is.
Well, yeah, that's why I'm
he doesn't lay 15 cents out of his pocket. It's paid for by the consumer.
But that's what I'm talking about, why we want to try and mitigate increased costs, because it gets passed down to the consumer. That's my concern.
No, but the other token, he's getting at is what? They're not going to lower the cost of the stores aren't going to lower the cost of the grocery.
Right, so you start, right, all
but,
of a sudden we're paying.
John's concern is they might raise them if all of a sudden they feel a big difference.
That's
because
my, that's
well,
if there isn't,
well, how could they raise it if there's not a fee on it? That's my point.
Because we're getting them an excuse to raise it.
Yeah, now they have new costs. They have new overhead. They go from, you know, buying 1,000 bags at a penny to 1,000 bags at 15 cents. It's a big difference. And that's just a small number for a supermarket. For the mom and pop, it's
that's
not very
hours.
Much, but
that's
yeah.
Like 2 hours at ShopRite. Right? Maren?
It's okay.
Okay. But and another thing, too, which I think, and we spoke about this the one time, is not only should we invest in the reusable bags with Tim and the ORA.
And whatever.
We should do signage too. You know, signs, maybe something where you go grab the shopping cart, we can make signs for all the stores saying, don't forget your forget your reusable bag or different things in a window. And
lots of stores have those now.
Yeah, they do. Okay. Ron, would you support the ban, just the ban on plastic bags, but not the not the fee?
I the fee, number one, I definitely don't support. Mm-hmm. I think it's double dipping, so to speak, and sort of even factored in. I guess I see the points of view on it, but to assess another fee on top of a fee, it's just ludicrous to me. I mean, I just don't get that. The plastic bags itself, as I've said in the past, I think it should be regulated. When does it stop? You know, and at this point, making local laws for Ulster County is not going to save the world, you know. But, and again, I'm not against the plastic bag ban, but how do we go about it to make it fair and equitable to everybody? That's my concern. And we're not beating one person over the head and another person's making out. You know, that's my issue with it.
Right, well, right. It would be fair for all the retailers, you know, in the county. And to your point where Ulster's small, you're right about that. But one thing I think that I've seen in the years I've been here, when one county and then another county pass it, and a smoking law is a great example. Mm-hmm. We were the first county in the state or the second or third county in the state to pass the smoking law. When we passed it, within 1 month, the state passed it. So our law just became invalidated. So, I understand what you're saying. It's Ulster County is certainly not going to save the world, but if we do it and then Dutchess does it, or
and we affect our own backyard.
Again, I get all of that. I just want to make sure it's fair.
I
just want to make sure it's fair. That's my concern.
Right.
Ron, did you read my FAQ that was passed out at the last meeting? Because I actually dealt with a large number of your objections in that FAQ.
I think I did. I read so much of the stuff.
I know.
So
on the economic objection of a double charge, I mean, yes. So this is sort of consumers are going to be charged for bags. I mean, they have to be some. It's a cost to retailers. Right now, they're being charged on the price of goods. The question is when you move it to a charge that's directly on the bag, will the retailers drop the price of other goods to compensate? Economics says that in a competitive market, they will have to. Because, you know, they can only afford a certain profit margin. Mm-hmm. It'll come one place or another. So it won't be a double charge for long, as long as retailing is competitive, which it is. That's the basic principle there. It isn't a double charge. It does feel like one. I mean, what really makes these laws very hard to pass is we're taking away something that people are used to getting for free. I mean, that's really the the salient thing here, and that's hard to do as a legislator. I mean,
correct. It was like the deposit on soda bottles and water bottles.
Yeah, exactly. It's very much like that.
It's the same.
It's very much
it's
like
the same
that.
Issue, and I didn't really see that much, if I remember correctly, that much of a price fluctuation in soda and water.
Yeah. I mean, well, soda's a little bit different because
a little bit, but you know, sugar. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different other sugars and stuff like that, yeah. And coloring. I mean, there's other than water, and water's water. You know, yeah. You're going to factor in different prices to meet the consumer or the manufacturer's needs for the consumer. Uh-huh. But the bottom line is, I don't remember seeing that much of a drastic increase in the price of water, soda, whatever other taxes or the deposits were put on those bottles. I mean,
but know, the chart that was charged to the consumer.
Yes.
Right.
So there would be no increase because the chart that was directly a tax to the consumer. So the
correct.
If the water was a dollar, now it's $1.05, yeah. But they can get a. I mean, that was to encourage recycling. So it's a little bit of a. I see it as a different model.
Well, isn't it kind of one the same though? If you're doing a tax, it's a tax or a deposit on a plastic bag, isn't it? The
it's
same?
Not a deposit.
Well, the deposit on bottles helps more.
Because you get it back.
An extra tax, bring them back. You know, right? They're getting it back. Of course. But it's still a tax then.
I think the mindset with putting the charge, which I'm open again, I'm open to whatever. But the mindset with putting the charge on the bag is to start is twofold. One, to really move toward reusables, but how it partially does it, it's because it requires that you put that charge on the receipt. Mm-hmm. So consumers start to think of those bags as a commodity, not as something they get for free, but I have to purchase this bag if I want to use it. Just like I have to purchase that water and that coffee, if I want this bag, I have to buy it. And I think the concept of even a penny is you still have to buy it. I mean, I do think there are people who would say, oh, even a penny, it's not about the penny, but oh, it's the reminder that it's not free.
Whatever it takes to get people off of using bags, period.
Yeah.
Right.
To bring your own. That's
the,
this whole
that's
discussion
the aim.
Is about.
Yeah, that's
is
the aim.
It's not, you know, the.
Not to switch to paper.
$5 a bag extra, everybody remembered their bags. Or you'd be selling out in the parking lot.
Or you'd just be taking your card out.
Or just be
stuff.
Taking your card out, which isn't the end of the world either.
Just one more comment on this. I know people are going to be upset when they see on their the receipt, oh, I paid 2 cents for a plastic bag? That's ridiculous. What next are they going to do to me? How about instead of itemizing it as 2 cents, at the top of the receipt, price of the plastic bag included? And then whatever, however you want to regulate it, and have, you know, if it's 1 cent, 2 cent, you
price
know,
of or, the paper bag included.
I mean the paper. I'm sorry.
Or
no,
2 cents.
Price of the bag included.
Or else you could put a sign saying 2 cents per bag. If you bring your own, there's no extra charge, and that's reinforcing somebody's line every time they go through.
Yeah.
The toll. Every time they go through, it's reinforcing.
Again, I'm looking to make it fair. I still disagree with a charge.
And that's fine. Listen, we all vote the way we feel, and everybody's entitled to their vote.
Right.
I just think we've talked about this for. Tracy and I have spoken about it for years.
We have
trying to do something with it, and
many years,
and I just think
the time is right.
I think we can do it, but we just got to be able to get.
We
the
have
support
to get it
for
right,
it. And we have to be able to do it so people's habits are changing when they go in the store.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long, you know. I'm sorry, Tom.
No, this is actually a new issue that we have to discuss. In Section 7, there's a loophole here that needs to be fixed if you're going to charge for bags. Section 7A says you can provide reusable bags for free.
As long as they're over a certain
right,
amount.
And
okay.
Exactly. So,
thank you.
Yeah. The way they usually get around that, if you want to allow some given away for free, is you limit it to like 2 weeks a year.
I actually took it upon myself to change it. I see the failure without having the mill, but I feel like if there's a company that wants to give away free bona fide reusable bags, why?
Well, the thing is, if you start giving away these thicker, just barely thicker plastic bags, people start using them like single use bags.
Barely thick.
Maybe
gotcha.
They use them twice. They cost the company 30 cents instead of 10 cents. They're still...
Okay.
And this happened in Chicago.
That's interesting.
Okay, no, that's a good point. I'll fix it.
So you have to limit the free giveaways. In my version of line, just
unless you put, you could give away a bag that cost them a dollar. You can give them away unlimited.
Yeah, you can give away.
Throw them
you can
out.
Give away.
That's
so
what I was.
Say
that's what I was thinking.
Bags are free.
Right, right. That's
if you
what I mean.
Want, but just
right.
don't let plastic ones be free.
That's what I was thinking. Just the concept of those ones that are at the grocery checkout that they sell for basically $1.50. That's what I was thinking of. But I'll fix it to either define it or.
So can we all let's leave it. I mean, if we're
can I raise two other issues? We don't have to talk, but I just want everyone to be thinking of them. So because I know it's getting long, so I had to decide for the purpose of just putting it on paper where the enforcement would be. It made sense to me that it would be Department of the Environment. Most models across the country split in one of two ways. Department of Health, which for us I think would be pretty onerous for health because they don't normally deal with retail establishments in the same way. Restaurants, yes, but not retail establishments. And two, DPW in those communities where DPW is in charge of sanitation. Which that would make perfect sense. That would be our RRA, but it's not. But because we have a a public benefit corp running our sanitation, then we take that out of the mix. So, a couple other options that came up. So, the Department of Environment, Department of Health, although that seems less logical to me, and weights and measures. I put in here that Department of the Environment could. Reach out to and should reach out as needed to health or weights and measures if they need it.
What about the RRA? We've already got somebody that goes around with the haulers.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting. I don't know.
He's out on the road. He's got a company. Vehicle.
Are we allowed to give them a duty? Because they we'd have to change it in our contract.
Have to talk to the attorneys and we'd have to talk to Tim. But you've got somebody that's out there dealing with all the haulers.
There's been discussions about the dog laws, though. I just want to remind you about having somebody who's not
a county employee
doing enforcement.
No, you're right. You're right.
I mean, I do think weights and measures also does
weights and measures
sense.
Could be good because they go to the gas station to make sure when it's $2.99 a gallon that you're getting $2.99. They do weights. They do
it would change
the butcher
their interface
shop, the
too.
Shop right. They're in the stores weighing their scales.
And they do weights,
anyway.
They do item pricing checks where they
do
take
item
like 15 items off the shelf.
Would you do you want me to reach out to the executive and or the departments and talk to them? Yeah. I mean I think it's ultimately gonna be up to us.
Weights and measures would be the best, personally. They have the closest relationship to the retail stores as it is.
Okay.
They have the best relationship.
The other suggestion that came up was I want to say, was it Consumer Affairs, which is under the DA, but it's one person. It seems like
a
stretch to me.
One person is sufficient because a lot of these laws.
Well, weights and measures has two.
Yeah, complaints.
Has two, and you know what? They're already in the field.
Yeah.
They know how to work with the people. They're.
No, I actually agree with you that weights and measures is best, but.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Because Consumer Affairs, I mean, not to knock anybody, but a lot of times it's somebody sitting in the office and people come in and they may not really want to.
In the supermarkets.
Right.
Weights and measures deals with.
Yeah.
Deals with retail people
they're
now.
On site.
Deals with them. They're on site. They know how to.
It does make sense.
Relationships.
I think the reason I was thinking environment is because in large part it's an environmental initiative.
Yeah.
But weights and measures is a more logical home in terms of practicality, probably in the interface. And you have the double benefit of if
and they
they're
have two staff.
Yeah. If they're going in,
they're a little
they're,
bigger.
Okay. So I'll talk
it
to.
Sounds
them.
More neutral to me too. You're a retailer, you're more. You don't feel it's balanced. Obviously, the environment agency.
Well, and those
push.
People are in the store. Already, they're weighing their scales. If you want to get a pound of salami, they're making sure the scales are a pound. They got a certified scale, so they're in these stores anyway. They know the people.
Okay, and then the last thing, just that I want everybody to think about is the violation penalty section. Just because I put in I basically just put in numbers that I from across looking at so. I also put in that it begins with a written warning, not an offense the first time, a written warning, and then that after that there's an escalating fine, 100, 200, 500, and that there's also a procedure for appeal.
Or to lose a license, or to lose a...
I just have the procedure for appeal, and
that's simple. It's not a gray area. It's black or white. You've got plastic bags in your store. You don't have them in your store. Mm-hmm.
The charging the fees.
It becomes a little more complicated.
But I mean for enforcement.
Yeah.
If somebody is using an illegal bag, I mean, it's
right. Right.
Well, so there's potentially two different types of enforcement then.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, there's, did you charge a fee for a legal bag?
If there's, yeah.
Or did you supply an illegal bag?
Right.
And I do think, similar to the polystyrene foam legislation, which we've seen, there was never an expectation that we were going to have the polystyrene foam police, nor, I think, is there an expectation that now someone's going to be full-time looking out for plastic bags. It is largely a complaint-based. It's an education component, and then it's a complaint-based rollout. We could expect a great deal of compliance. We have great businesses, and we've gotten compliance with the polystyrene foam without a lot of having to go out and scare tactics. That just hasn't happened. The last thing, again, to put out for people just to think about is there were examples, which I thought was interesting, but maybe onerous, for reporting. Requirements that the stores keep accounting of, in some cases, and I put that for you to look at, some that they keep accounting of their numbers of sales in the cases where they had a charge for the paper bags. They kept accounting so that the county could subsequently look at it and evaluate the program and its effectiveness and require reporting.
Couldn't that be
reporting?
Propriety? You know, if Hannaford sold $40,000 a year and ShopRite sold $15,000 a year, then those stores would know what sales are doing.
I'm just thinking
they're going to collect the fee.
Well, they don't actually have to report it.
Yeah.
You could require record keeping without making it public.
Yeah, because they're going
to
just say
sure.
You have to tell what's a measure.
It's not public.
Yeah.
No,
that's fair. Then.
They're going to have to, you know.
I'm just thinking what the objection would be. Somebody say, well, I don't want anybody, I don't want my
I mean, I think that the positive, what I see as, which is why I didn't put it in. I just put it in for you all to review and come back and say what you thought. I think the positive of it is it certainly allows us, the county, to assess the program, assess the change, and really see what's working and what's not. But the downside is it could be onerous for the businesses to have to keep this records. They have to keep it as a part of their overall record keeping in
terms
of sales.
Anyway.
But but just a specific record keeping, and then subsequently it's definitive work for whatever department we're asking to do it to crunch the numbers. You know what I mean? If it's weights and measures, they're going to be getting.
If you do record keeping, you might have to exempt the small people who
probably
just buy a bushel of bags when they buy them and don't have any.
Which is, again, why I kept it out of the legislation, because I thought, let's just try to keep this as clean and simple as possible.
I mean, we know there's going to be a benefit right off the bat, because
I'm not that worried.
I'm not either.
Yeah.
Although if you have a 1 cent fee, you might want record keeping just to see how effective it is, because no one knows how effective it's going to be.
Right.
You know, really small fee. 5 cent, I think everyone's established, 5 cent fees work. We don't really know at that lower level.
Okay. Well, let's,
So we need to think about the numbers. We need to think about charging, not charging.
Why don't
covered stores.
Do you want to get an email? Will you and I, we could talk maybe tomorrow. Well, I'm off Friday, so maybe we can talk Friday. We'll come up with the...
I might be away, but I'll let you know.
An email or a letter we can write to all the legislators. Mm-hmm. Say, can you give us... Here's the proposed... Just, this is what we discussed. Can you let us know your concerns or questions or whatever? And then...
Yeah, and I'll bring it up to our caucus
tomorrow.
We'll invite
them to the next meeting. Mm-hmm. And if somebody doesn't have any comments... They can't come here and have comments.
Good luck.
Okay.
Well, yeah. I'm the chairman of the meeting. I don't have to call on them.
And I'll get with you just about what, for the purposes of the next meeting,
and
what
you know
we change.
I'll call Ken Rock tomorrow, let him know how the meeting went, and just some of the ideas, and we'll see. I mean, I honestly think there should be some support, but... I mean, if we reach out to everybody and we find out 18 people say not in a million years, then we know what we're dealing with. I don't think it'll happen.
No, I mean, it seemed, in talking to the Democratic caucus, it seemed Like, there was pretty strong support in the caucus.
Okay.
But I think we should, you know, come to something that, if we can come to something that we can agree on, that would be great.
Well, yeah, we will. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's good. I am. Okay. Is that all right? Anything else? Any time? Is that all right? And for now?
Happy to see partners.
Yeah, no, it's good. Thanks for all your help. It's,
yes, thank you.
My thing is starting next month, maybe ask you for the next couple months to run the meetings. I'll be here, but I coach the wrestling team at the high school.
Okay.
And we don't get done with practice till 6:30, so I run right over here. And I'm actually the head coach this year, so Mondays I'll blow right over. I probably won't get here till 4:15. So
I'm just, fine, whatever.
You know, so you can. And when I get here, you can run a meeting. Go.
No, you can take over. It's okay.
We'll figure it out. I'm not worried. But it's going to be November, December, and probably January. So just meetings.
I know this meeting's gone long, but I don't know if you wanted, you'd ask Dave.
Sure,
to
yeah,
come
Dave,
last
we'd love to.
Did you want to
give us an update?
Give us an update, or
just briefly? Okay. I'm going to keep you long.
Yeah. No, listen, we appreciate.
No, you waited through the whole
meeting.
We've
kept you long.
No, I was here because I'm finding this is really important for us to be able to take information back to the town. And so that's why I'm showing up, and that's why I'm here. As far as the county EMC Council, I think the basic things that you need to know is that we try to educate ourselves with regard to issues. We've had great talks on solar. We had a great talk on climate change from Mohonk. It was a super, because they've kept records for over 100 years. They can tell you when the ice formed and when the first bird came back. I mean, they they know it all and graphed it out and everything else in the world. We've had great talks on the quality of water in the creeks and rivers that flow into the Hudson. This next week, just for your information, the DEP is going to present a PowerPoint on the whole aqueduct system from 100 years ago to present and what they're doing to upgrade it. And
when is that? Next week's meeting?
It's next week.
What night is that?
Wednesday night, right in this room at 6:30.
Can you send an email out on it?
Actually, the presentation starts at 6:30.
Okay.
We're going to meet at 6:30.
Yeah, no, that would be good.
The presentation starts at 7?
And we have a meeting. Our meeting's Tuesday next week, so I mean, if anybody wants
to come.
Except we have solid waste.
So that's the first thing we try to do, is educate ourselves so that we have better information. The second thing is we always try to get updates from the DEC, the county DEC, as well as legislative updates and information on grants and that kind of thing that we can take back to our localities. And we're getting better at that, about disseminating that information as well. So, and the third thing, we always have a period of time where we allow each town to tell us what's going on in their town. Some of them are working on wetlands, some of them are worried about the amount of silt in the Esopus, the flow from the aqueduct system into the Esopus, all that kind of stuff. It's a wide-ranging discussion, but I think each of us always comes away with something. Well, maybe my town should think about that, or, oh, I'm glad that we've already done that, or, you know, for example, the town of Shandong is, I think, the only town that has set up its own policy with regard to conservation easements. It's something we're going to bring before all of the towns, but virtually in all our cluster developments now, there's a possibility, or all big developments, there's a possibility of clustering and then having a set-aside easement, of which we've got, I think we've got 10 easements now on property. So, you know, a lot of it's wetlands, a lot of it's, you know, not buildable, but nevertheless.
Yeah.
So that's basically what we're doing. We try to do it.
That's great.
Partly because of our meeting in the spring with Mary and Tracy. This whole connection with the legislature has been beneficial.
It's great to have you.
Thank
there
you.
Too.
Yeah. Thank you for coming.
You're welcome.
So, next Wednesday. Okay. Legislator Green, want to give us an update?
Just real quick. The main thing on climate smart is this handout for the clean energy and climate resources that'll take place after our meeting on the 24th.
What time is your meeting on the 24th?
At 5:30.
At 5:30.
And the you know, we have a format for our meetings in general with an opportunity to share, for the towns to share, and then we focus on specific items of interest for the county, because that's our charge. But in this case, the only thing we'll do, if we can get someone from the executive branch, is to focus on the budget. What in the budget for capital expenses, the capital budget, is earmarked for energy efficiency or renewables? And one of the things I want to find out a little more about is they are developing an RFP for more solar. And I think they mentioned it, but there's so much opportunity. And even here at the college and the law enforcement center and the county building, so many flat roofs with no shading that are stable roofs. If they're not stable roofs, you're not going to put. But anyway, and then the issue of resilience, which I'm glad to see is being addressed, and that'll be an important thing to share with people. And we want to try to coordinate so that the climate smart efforts that we're doing, the executive branch is doing, and the EMC are doing are complementary, and that we're not doubling up. And then for Solid Waste Management Improvement Corporation, we're still working on our document, and I think actually making some progress now, so that hopefully we don't have to ask for another extension, but by December we'll actually have a report that will then go to the legislature for input, to the RRA for input, supervisors for input, and the public. And then we'll finalize that as a report, and it'll have some recommendations, and we'll see where that goes. Good. So, thank you.
Can't get a jet shot?
No.
They both suck.
Thank you.
And thank you for working on the plastics.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Plastic bag ban.
Thanks.
I'm like you, Ron.
So we'll let you know.
I use them over and over.
Next month, we're back to normal schedule. Right?
But
what's
I do get a lot more, even with reusing bags. And I keep them in the car. If they get dirty, I'll throw them in the washing machine.
Just
absolutely.
I was just
we're looking at next month's schedule.
I'm pretty sure your meeting's on the 14th next month.
Okay.
Yes.
That's the standard. That's the standard.
Standard.
No, because of
actually,
the holiday.
I may be
what
here
do you mean,
for that meeting.
The holiday?
Meeting. We have our
no,
vacation.
Is it a regular Monday?
Yeah, it's our regular Monday.
So I'll be here next month. Full time.
At this location.
Yep.
So which day is it?
It's the 14th. It's the regular Monday.
14th.
Yeah, it goes back to the regular night.
6:30?
This meeting will be at 6, well, following legislative programs. Right.
But no sooner than 6.
Right.
What time did they get done tonight?
They didn't meet tonight.
Oh, that's why. We were 6:30 tonight. That's what
we're
I thought.
We're normally 6:30, I thought.
Well, yeah.
We're normally 6 o'clock or immediately following legislative programs or 6 o'clock. We were at 6:30 tonight, so the meeting could start after sunset.
Oh, right.
Do you mind if we do 6:30 for the next 3 months?
I don't mind.
Just help. I mean, I'll still be like 15 minutes late, but not 45 minutes late.
If it helps you, that's great.
Next month I'm good because we have weight certifications at Sorgerty's at 3:30. We'll be done at Sorgerty's by 4:40. I'll be back here by 5:30, and the kids go home. So I'll be here next month. Be no problem.
So we'll leave it at 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock next
and
month.
And then in December start at 6:30?
Just December and January would be a half hour later.
Okay.
That would help me out.
It may be easier driving down from Albany.
Is that a yes or a no?
All right, so Mary made a motion to adjourn.
Jonathan
seconded it.
All in favor?
All right.
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Thanks, Tom.
Yes, thank you.